Sorry, like orders. All right, the next matter on the court's docket is Electco versus Electco. Mr. Baldwin? Mr. Levin? Not sure. Are you Mr. Levin or
I'm Mr. Levin.
Okay. Do you want to come on up, please, sir, whenever you are ready?
Good morning, Your Honors. Please, the court. Sam Levin from the Baldwin Law Firm on behalf of Jim Electco. Your Honors, we're here today on appeal in large part because of the repeated decision-making that Mrs. Electco has made to her own benefit without regard to the impact it has on others. We have two assignments of error, admittedly from an order in which we largely prevailed at trial, but our two assignments of error regard child support and attorney's fees. Regarding the child support, this is a bit of an unusual case in terms of the brazenness with which Ms. Electco had, both in her communications with Mr. Baldwin, who is Mr. Electco's trial counsel, as well as with the court, to the degree in which she admitted that she is quitting this job, the second job she took, because she doesn't want to pay child support on that job. She threatened Mr. Baldwin that that's what she was going to do if he filed a motion to modify child support. That is what he did. Then that is what she did. On the stand at trial, she admitted that that was a driving factor in her decision to leave that job. And in her closing argument, I'm actually quoting her here, said, "I can quit any job for any reason. Doesn't mean I need to pay child support on unearned income."
Didn't the record also reflect that there are other reasons that she quit that job, such as the difficulty of having to get coverage herself and things of that nature?
So the record reflected that she said she had other reasons. The only one she ever gave to anyone was on the stand when she stated that the coverage issue that Your Honor mentioned. She provided no evidence about it. She provided no clarification. She didn't mention that it was unexpected by her. She's a nurse. This is the medical field. There's not necessarily anything unexpected about if you can't show up, you need to find something to replace you. And so even if that was a proper reason, even if that was a reason that motivated her, it's within the totality of the evidence, it does not appear to have been a major reason. But moreover, we don't necessarily agree that that is either reasonable also. Now, the court also found...
What you think is reasonable and what the judge thinks is reasonable may be two different things. And I guess to try to get to the heart
Absolutely.
Of that assignment, we've got a somewhat lengthy explanation from the court as to why it chose not to impute income to mother.
Yes.
Tell us why there is no evidence in the record to support that.
Well, the court's finding was twofold. It sort of first found that she presented presented an explanation, some of it legitimate, some of it illegitimate. I don't think there's any reasonable dispute that that wanting to keep her child support down is an illegitimate reason. And but the some legitimate, the court never expanded on that. So we were left from the record to assume that it could only have been the scheduling issue that she mentioned, because there was simply nothing else presented, nothing else in the record that provided any other reason than this scheduling issue. So, there's a reasonableness and good faith.
This is a second job, correct?
It is a second job.
And in reference to second jobs, there's the Brody case. But the Brody case is factually distinguishable in the fact that in Brody, that school teacher, when he was not working for 2 months out of the year, got a second job when they did the initial calculation for child support. Here, that's not the
that's,
same.
That's correct, Your Honor. And actually, I believe you're referring to the Cochran case.
Cochran, I apologize. You're absolutely right.
But yes, that is the situation that was in Cochran, and the court even went so far as to say normally a second job should not be the basis for imputed income. We don't disagree with that.
So why would that not be applicable here? I think that goes to the heart of what the court was saying.
In normal circumstances, we would agree, but we both have someone who demonstrated a willingness to take on a second job, had done so, demonstrated that she could take on the second job, and then had, she did not quit this job until a motion to modify child support was filed. I think the motive plays a substantial role in that. I don't recall offhand.
The court here credited the valid reasons more so than it did the invalid reasons. Is that a fair statement?
I don't know necessarily that that is a fair statement, because the court also emphasized the issue about...
But if the court didn't credit what it found to be the valid reasons more so than invalid reasons, we wouldn't be here on that issue.
Well, Your Honor, I think what the court credited most of all was a reason that was completely absent from the record, which is the second part of its explanation for why it didn't impute income, namely the impact it might have on visitation with the children. And we get into why that was an invalid reason for the court to even consider in the first place, because there was simply no evidence on it. No evidence was presented that it had interfered in any way.
Well,
and no evidence
there was some evidence of that, because she said that her employer, given the what she termed the unreasonable demands of her employer, that if the kids were sick, she would have to send the kids to daycare because she couldn't get her shift filled. She had to go to work anyway.
Well, but the kids weren't with her generally during the hours that she was.
But the point was if they were sick. Her testimony, the inference from her testimony is that she wanted to be home to care for the kids, but her employer's demands were such that the kids had to go to daycare even if they were sick.
Or she could fulfill her job requirements that she gave no indication she didn't know before she took the case and find a replacement to take the time off.
The court found that the employer's demands were there were some unreasonable demands on the part of the employer.
I believe the court's language was demands that she found unreasonable, but I'm not... I could be misremembering that.
But he credited those.
He did.
They were in his explanation for why he was choosing not to impute income.
Yes, they were part of his explanation, but I think
there was evidence in the record clearly to support that, because that was Mother's testimony.
That was Mother's testimony, even though she provided no additional evidence, and moreover provided no evidence that this was not something she knew prior to her beginning that job. You know, the judge may have reached that. Again, we believe the judge was reaching sort of outside the record, trying to draw his own conclusions. She never said, you know, and this was a surprise to me. She never said, you know, this is unusual within this field that I work. And it's our position that the case law that has built up over time. Now, obviously, it has changed somewhat since the Murphy case came into being, and so we think that was a very good, very good decision, but it's changed somewhat. But we do believe that the case law effectively requires her to have the burden of proof that she made the decision on, you know, for reasonable and good faith reasons. And we don't think she's met that burden when she doesn't present something as simple as this was, you know, this was not what I was expecting when I signed up for this job. That, you know, if she knew that this was coming, and then combined with the evidence that we have that she, you know, told Mr. Baldwin she was going to quit if he filed the motion to modify. She did quit when she filed the motion to modify. She says on the stand that avoiding child support was part of why she quit. She says in her closing argument that she was driven by reducing her child support. She says in filings with this court that she was driven by reducing her child support. That has been struck, and I don't want to get into that too far. But the point is that I don't think...
Or at all.
Right. But the point is, I believe that the evidence that was before the trial court was not sufficient to show that either that this was a reasonable and good faith reason for leaving the job, or that it was her driving factor in leaving the job. It was the child support was the only one she really emphasized, the only one she really talked about. Now, I would like to move on also to the attorney's fee question, if that's okay if it pleases the court. This was the fourth attempt at post-divorce litigation that Ms. Lechko had filed. Actually, the fifth, if you count the protective order she filed in Fairfax County and then abandoned. She filed this motion, again, it was her fourth or fifth, depending on your perspective, attempt less, you know, I think it was 5 months after the divorce order was entered. You know, we have in our brief kind of this litany that virtually any time she doesn't like something that our client does, her response is, I'm taking you to court for this, I'm taking you to court for this, I'm taking you to court for this, I'm taking you to court for this. This is someone who is a serial litigator, someone who has abused the court system.
But she prevailed on some of these issues before the court.
A little bit.
More than none. It's hard to call it frivolous if she prevails on anything.
Well, first of all, what the court found to be a material change of circumstances didn't even exist at the time she filed. She was thinking about moving at some point. I guess a couple weeks later, she filed. She then filed her notice of relocation, and then she moved more than a month after she filed this motion. And it was her relocation that the court found to be a material change of circumstances in the first place. So if we're looking to what the facts were at the time she filed then actually we would argue that it was frivolous at that time because there had been no material change in the circumstances.
The denial of attorney's fees came at the stage where the court was making its ruling.
Certainly, but we think that the posture that court was in at the time that she filed, it should also be relevant to that consideration, especially in light of everything else that she's filed, in light of the comparable income that she took, and in light of frankly, in light of the fact that she did lose on most of these issues, the fact that she had suffers no cost from repeatedly bringing these motions, and we do think that it rises, We've made this hard for ourselves, I think, somewhat because we understand this is an abuse of discretion standard. Not just is this an abuse of discretion standard, but we've actually, I believe, chosen about the hardest kind of abuse of discretion to prove.
So you know that you're facing an uphill battle.
We understand that we are facing an uphill battle on this point, but we do think that it's incumbent on both the trial court and this court, discretion is not completely unbridled to say that, there's a point where this is enough.
Mr. Glenn, I have a question for you, circling back to your earlier argument.
Sure.
How is that not waived?
Which argument?
Where is it preserved in reference to the underemployment? I don't see or note in the record any objection to the court's finding about her being underemployed.
Well, we did object to the court's failure to impute income. We didn't believe that the court actually found that she was not underemployed. The court, I believe, found, as Judge Attlee was averring to, that her decision to be voluntarily underemployed, was in reasonable and good faith exception to the rule about mandatory income. We do believe that our objection made on the final order, combined with
But at the hearing, is there any objection that was made in reference to the court's finding of the underemployment? Because that's essentially what we're talking about.
Well, I don't believe that. I don't believe that our position was unknown. I think the statute.
Well, that's not what I'm asking. For 5A18, mm-hmm. the court has to be on notice that there's an issue, correct?
Correct.
Where in the record did you make the court aware prior to the order that there was an issue with this underemployment?
Well, I believe that the historic case law has been that with the statutory provision that of course trumps to some degree the rules of the court.
I'm going to try it one more time.
Sure.
Can you point somewhere in the record where it supports your objection to the court's finding about the underemployment?
No, Your Honor. I don't believe that we made that specific objection to the court. However, I believe under the statutory law that we are not required to make that specific objection when our position has been made clearly known to the trial court prior to its ruling. And I would argue that trial counsel's closing argument did that, that it was sufficient to put the court on notice.
That a closing argument is sufficient to preserve error?
If it places squarely before the court the knowledge of what our position is, yes, I believe, and again, I don't remember the statutory site off the top of my head, but it's the statute that error does not have to be specific as long as objections do not have to be, we're not going to toss out appeals as long as the court has been placed on notice as to what the position of the parties effectively is. Again, I do want to very briefly touch on the remedy that we are requesting. I think it is a bit of an unusual remedy, and to give a very brief reason that we have asked this court to effectively rule on these issues instead of a simple remand is that we are concerned, given Ms. Olechko's past history regarding litigation, that a remand hearing is going to devolve into another attempt to rehear all the issues of this case.
You can't turn us into the fact finder.
I understand, Your Honor. Our position is that there is enough evidence in the record for the court to be. But if this court is not inclined to do that, then we would request that any remand order, any mandate from this court instruct the trial court that its remand is to be limited to consider to correcting any errors that this court finds, so that it does not turn into, a new motion to modify child support that hasn't, that she hasn't filed or anything of that nature. And also, we have asked for attorney's fees on appeal. There any further questions?
No. Thank you, Your Honor. We'll come down and greet you. Mr. Levin, did you sign in, by the way?